Right.
And you pay taxes on the interest, and it compounds, and at the end of the day, you have a liquidated sum that's an after-tax sum, and then you have to gross it up. That is exactly what we did. Every step of the way.
Okay, well, let me ask you this then. Do you have...
And I can also tell you very quickly why it's exactly the same as the pre-tax number. And the very quick answer is... principal times interest. You want to reduce it for taxes, you multiply it by 65%. So 0.65 times P times I is the after-tax amount. Grossing it up at the end is times 1 over 0.65. They cancel out. And if you're doing what you just described, you can work through the algebra, but in the end, that's going to be the answer. It does makes no difference whatsoever, which is why courts really don't want to get into it. And because
provided
get much more
credit. Provided you gross it up at the end.
Sorry?
Right? Provided you gross
Absolutely.
It up.
Absolutely. If you don't gross it up at the end, then
they pay taxes on money that they already ought to have been deemed to have been
paid
their taxes.
Right.
But here's my problem. At A17696, you
what
have a calculation. A17696. Now, this...
Why don't I have it? Oh, 17. Sorry.
And I found these charts to be a little difficult to work with, but this one is one that illustrates where I ran into a problem.
Okay.
Okay. Now, if you look at the...
orient myself just for a second.
Okay.
Go ahead. I'm with you.
The first line, 3Q1998.
Yes.
Go all the way over to taxable income, $30 million
mm-hmm.
and change.
Yeah.
And taxes paid.
Yes.
Right? Okay, so the taxes paid $10 million out of the $30 million, right?
That's right, yeah.
So what's left over ought to be around $20
million. That should sounds right to
right.
me.
Right, and yet we then go back to opening balance on the line that's marked 4Q1998, and instead of $20 million, we see $30 million. So it looks like the taxes have not been taken out of the balance.
No, I think...
what am I missing?
I have to get my head into this, but I think that... the hypothetical that's being worked on is that...
this isn't really fair, because we're basically into the arithmetic
that's
here.
That's okay. The hypothetical that was being worked upon is that we took the Supreme Court's guidance in DevEx, and we said, okay, let's assume that Boston owed us the money, and they didn't pay. What would we have done? What we would have done is we would have accrued as income the amount that was owed and paid taxes on it, even though it wasn't paid. So
this is the hypothetical world.
Paid.
Right.
And
you would have had $30 million in the first quarter. You had $30 million worth of taxable income.
You know, I'm just not 100% sure what that means.
Yeah.
But basically, what we did is exactly what you described,
right.
and so the taxable income is the column 4, the taxes paid is column 5. You can see the taxes being taken out each year.
Taken out, but then if you go back to the opening balance on the next column, it looks like the number taxable income, not the number from taxable income minus taxes. That's my
I'm just not sure
problem.
What's being done with
okay.
the opening
let me
column.
Propose the
what
following.
I know that was done, though.
Okay,
sure.
All right. Well, it may
it,
be.
It is what Your Honor said.
What I'm going to...
And furthermore, that's why there's been no there's no dispute from anyone that the pre-tax amount is what the court imposed. And I don't think there's been a dispute from anyone that our computation, although I just heard it, I guess, from Mr. Demeris, but I don't see it in their papers, that our computation does exactly what you described.
Okay, well, I don't know if my questioning has been as focused, perhaps, as it needs to be in order to elicit what's troubling me, but I think it would be useful for the parties to submit a brief letter about this precise issue. Now,
mm-hmm.
this precise issue is
sure.
not in itself very precise, but I think you probably both understand what my concern is. If you can address the question of whether this calculation was done and demonstrate how it was done in a manner that reflects that the taxes were taken out of the balance at each quarter.
Okay, I'm happy to do that.
Rather than the balance accumulating on a non-tax basis.
My guess is that it's explained in here.
It may well be, but I didn't find it.
Because it wouldn't work otherwise. I mean, or putting it differently, you know, this formula that I just showed you is all that we're talking about. And just as a matter of just utterly simple algebra,
okay.
If you gross it up, if the number, let's start with what we all agree upon. We all agree that the after-tax number that we've computed is correct.
The problem with your formula is that what we're doing is if you have multiple years, you're not grossing up until the end, right?
I mean, yeah.
I would rather
make it different. The reason it's the same is because all you're doing is taking out taxes, and you're using, in this hypothetical, we're using the same tax rate. That's key. So we're using the 35% tax rate always. That's what they proposed. We acquiesced in that. It becomes very muddy if you're using, as corporations often do, different tax rates in different years. Because
I understand.
So long as all you're doing is using the same tax rate always, then if you pay taxes at the beginning and gross up at the end, you wind up with the same numbers if you didn't.
Well, if you have multiple years, I'm not completely convinced that's right, because I think I would rather have, well,
I think you're wrong.
You can demonstrate that.
I'll be happy to. My guess is this declaration does it, but
okay.
I will endeavor right. to make it even more clear if that's possible.
I will look forward to learning.
I will attempt to.
All right, and what we should do, let's do this. Let's make it, we don't need a whole lot of extra paper on this. I think letters no more than 5 pages
okay.
that will deal with this calculation issue be very helpful.
So
within
that I'm clear,
2 weeks?
2 weeks is fine. The only question we're addressing is whether our computation, in fact,
satisfies
the formula that you
formula, the description of the process that
okay.
Does that encompass, Mr. Damaris, the concept as you see it
that
you would like to address?
Yes.
Very good. That would be
okay.
very helpful.
Fine.
Thank you. Those are the three issues, and if you're finished, very good. Mr. Damaris, we've gone over your time, but we'll give you a couple of minutes of rebuttal if you need it.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll be brief. First of all, going back to the validity issue, I think one of the things that we should stay focused on, and that was addressed by Mr. Diskant, is ERSEC versus the claim. And I'll just briefly state Your Honor's question on ERSEC is on A18068. It says, this is reading from ERSEC, the edges may be cuffed if desired or simply smooth to facilitate entry. Now, entry into what is the key point? What ERSEC is doing is going intraluminal. It's going into the lumen. Mr. Diskant likes to call ERSEC a staple, but let me compare what these two products are, because they do exactly the same thing. ERSEC is small, crimped down. It goes intraluminal. It gets cuffed and smooth, and it goes into the lumen, and then you expand it, at which point it goes into the internal walls of the lumen. That's how it works. He calls it stapling, but it's taking the lumen and a graft, going in between the two, and you expand it.
What causes it to expand? Is it physician cause it, or is it?
Yeah, there's a device. There's a device here's the ERSEC sleeve. There's a device internal. You then stick it into the lumen, and you squeeze the device, and it expands the ERSEC.
But you've got, presumably you've got two portions of the artery here that you've just cut.
Yes, there's an artery and then the graft.
All right, you put the graft in, and you stick ERSEC in all the way through the graft?
To cover the joint. So you've got the lumen and the graft, and you're abutting them, and you're putting the ERSEC sleeve across the juncture, and then expanding it so it's grabbing both sides and holding it together. So imagine a wire mesh.
No, I've got the idea.
That's exactly what a stent is. A stent is a wire mesh that's crimped down on a balloon. It goes into the affected area of the coronary artery. The balloon is expanded, and the stent embeds itself into the wall of the lumen. They're doing exactly the same thing. They are embedding themselves in the wall of the lumen. Why is that important? We only tried Claim 23. Claim 23 is not snaking it up through the groin, up through the artery, the method of implanting a stent. It's not what Claim 23 is. Claim 23 is an expanded intraluminal vascular graft that has a thin wall. It has a tubular member of a first diameter and a second. It has an expanded diameter, and then it gives you the architectural aspects of the device. And the only key issue that was tried at the first trial is ERSEC smooth or not. If ERSEC is smooth, everything else in Claim 23, which is an apparatus claim, was met. Their principal defense down below was ERSEC had bumps and ridges and therefore doesn't fit 23. It's what the Patent Office found when it rejected the claim. So when you look at what's going on here as far as what was tried below on the ERSEC issue, we need to stay focused on what the claim was. Claim 44 is the claim that Mr. Discant's talking about, claim which would talk about how you go about the procedure of the Palmas patent. But Claim 23 is the one we tried, and bumps and ridges were critical, and that's what they argued to the jury.
Okay.
On the stipulation point, Your Honor, if we look at, and this was your question, Judge Guyer, so you asked, or was it yours, Judge Bryson, you asked about what about the stipulation makes it for the purposes of that trial?
Yeah.
And if you go to the record and look at what was actually said to the court, the court says, and this is on A4821, the court says, line 3, trust me, it's not the same as giving one jury another jury's verdict on everything in the case. It is a finding of that other jury. She's essentially saying, I'm going to tell this jury about the previous jury verdict on the right. Palmas patent. And then we say, or Mr. Kohlberg for Boston Scientific says, Your Honor, if that is Your Honor's decision, then I would like to go back. I'd like to think a moment. But as I pointed out, we still think it's so inflammatory and prejudicial, we may be more inclined to accept your stipulation. We will treat the S-series stents as non-infringing rather than risk that prejudice. It's an offer that was made, and we may accept that to keep, and it goes on. He's talking temporally there. We accept it for this trial because you're going to instruct the jury on this fact. It's clearly temporal for that trial. That is not a stipulation that the AVE stents are non-infringing substitutes. It's okay, if you're going to do that right now, I'm going to do this.
They're not non-infringing substitutes.
Yes, I can
do that.
Yes,
it's the
non-infringing substitutes. Yeah, right. Yeah. But so it clearly, in context there, it was temporal for that purpose. And to get to Judge Gallarza's point about the Third Circuit law, the Williams v. Runyon case says quite clearly the court must explain on the record the reasoning behind its decision to reconsider prior ruling. That did not happen in this case. And in the Waldorf case, one of the reasons for the Third Circuit law to get out of a stipulation is the occurrence of intervening events since the parties agreed to the stipulation. So under Third Circuit law, clearly we should be able to get out of the deal there. And then the last point on the interest, we'll address it in the letters, but Mr. Discant's point about P times I is wrong on the math.
Well, that's
if you're collecting interest on an after-tax principal, it is a very different number than collecting interest on the full principal. That's straight high school math, and we can explain it in the letters unless you want to talk about it now.
No, I think that the letter will be more orderly, and we will be able to follow it better than trying to do this orally. Well, that concludes the hearing. We appreciate the argument, very helpful argument from both counsel.
Thank you.
The case is submitted.
All rise. The Honorable Court is adjourned from day to day.